5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, one and all. That was indeed Freddie Mercury, the late, great Freddie Mercury with The Great Pretender, one of my favourite songs I've seen along there. I was out of tune, naturally, but what are you going to do? So it is, yeah, it's episode 77, hi Gideon, of the new Panic Room, 9:30 Central on Texas and time, and I think Texas time we'll call it from now on, because, you know, we are the biggest state, so it is, yeah, so yeah, it, you know, it only seems like it was like, you know, a week ago that we were last on, and maybe in many ways it was, but I don't think we've spoken since last week's show, so we're going to play Xtina's Fanfare, and we're going to say hi in a bit.
Come on, I'm with you. gosh.
Well, it's a yee-haw and yip-dee-doo for the Dark Poet Princess Xtina.
You know, how was that?
How was that for an introduction? I don't get an introduction, do I?
You don't. That's
no,
true.
No, I do not. No. So you should be grateful. What a build up.
It is. I don't know.
You're just gonna be dull now, aren't you? Oh yeah, thanks. Yeah. Yeah.
I hope
yeah,
not.
Thanks
no,
for
but
that.
That is something.
Mm.
How do I follow that? You know, I was grooving. Well, I don't know about grooving, but I was swaying to the song, and I wasn't trying to sing because I don't really know the words, and because I can't sing. I try. Well, you know, Becky and I tried to sing to you, and
yeah,
you
and
didn't,
you know that
you didn't
was
appreciate
that
at all.
No, I did. You need to dig that out for our 100th anniversary show.
Oh,
100th
God.
Show.
Awesome.
Because it was great. It was brilliant.
I wasn't drunk enough.
Well, that's the thing, you know. I honestly cannot carry a tune in a book here, and there might be a name for it. Everybody knows the name for it. But I actually have a phobia of singing in public, you know. But get a few beers down, mate, and I'm king of the karaoke because you know you don't care that you sound shit. You know, I've got 3 or 4 beers and I'm Sinatra. It's great, but
you know, I always hope that I don't sound as bad as I think I do. You know, that's always my hope, because when I was younger, I used to, you know, blare the music and sing into my hairbrush and think I was like really, you know, Madonna or something. I did,
mm-hmm,
seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But I was singing to my son when he was just a baby, and he's this precious baby in my arms, and I'm singing to him, and I remember him putting his little finger up to my mouth and saying, no.
Yeah.
So that's pretty bad. That's really bad, isn't
That's terrible, isn't it? You must have been really, really bad. Because kids are entertained by most things, to be honest.
So that's what I'm thinking. I must really be just that bad.
It must be. So hey, what have you been up to this week? And I don't usually ask, because to be honest, I don't care either way. But I just thought, you know, let's be sociable.
Okay, well, I've been trying to keep warm. You know, it's really freaking cold.
It is. Yes.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to start referring to this as the blizzard of 2018. So there's that. But I've been editing this wonderful dark poetry collection, and I know you're not one for poetry too much, but this is so good, and I can't wait to get it finished and get it out there, because it's good. It really is. You know what it reminds me of? I read years and years ago the Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx. I'm not a huge Motley Crue fan. I never was, but I read that book, and I swear to you, I fell in love with Nikki Sixx just a little bit after I read that, and it was so good, I could have easily turned to the first page again and started reading.
Oh, wow,
and I get the feeling, I get that feeling when I'm reading, it's Sadie Whitecoat is her pen name, so when I'm reading these poems by her, that's the feeling that I get is, you know, from that book, so that's really awesome.
That's brilliant. I should look forward to that one.
Yes, and the cover's pretty kick-ass, too.
So when will that be available?
Give
it a plug. When will that be available?
Yeah, Valentine's. So February, what is it?
Ooh.
February 14th, is that Valentine's?
I think it is this year, yeah. So the perfect Valentine's gift. So hellboundbookspublishing.com. Buy the book, people. So that's good. You know, it's, and I hear tell they have another one out in time for Valentine's, which is I don't know how to describe it. It is an eclectic expose, I suppose, exploration of the fine art of spanking. It has to be read to be believed. It is a work of art. It has artwork in it.
It is created
by the author. It is unusual. It is dark. It is funny. It is spanky.
I was going to say, who doesn't love a good spanking?
I can't imagine anyone who does not like a good, jolly good spanking. But that too, again, the perfect, and it's been designed to look or to emulate, and I'll be careful how to choose my words here, to emulate the style of a children's book.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that is.
I just hope, you know, the bookstores don't stick it in the wrong section. That would be terrible. That would be terrible.
It was definitely fascinating to read. That book was very fascinating.
It is a jolly good read, actually. And part of it is in the form of like of a stage play.
Mm-hmm.
A screenplay. So you could act it out with your friends. Get your friends
with
around.
Your friends.
And
use your sisters. And act
it out.
No.
No, I wouldn't. Be honest. We're not encouraging incest on this show.
Maybe you can cue up my music again. And no, just kidding.
shall we move on?
I think so, yeah.
Say, Xtina, what have we got on the show this evening?
We have James A. Moore, and I'm very excited to talk to him. I have been stalking him on Facebook for quite some time now, so it would be exciting to talk to him.
Another one with a restraining order against you. There's going to be nobody left at the end of the day.
Not yet.
Who's left?
Well, they don't know quite how scary I am yet, so I have not been
he's about to find out, isn't he? He's about to find out the hard way. So, well, tell you what, you know, you stalked him. You can introduce him. Off you go.
Thanks. I was just taking a drink. Thank you.
Well, duh. Mm-hmm.
Okay, how do I introduce somebody? I just said his name. Do I ask if he's there? Because that's what you do. Are you there, James? How's that? No.
You can only do that if you press the buttons, to be honest.
Okay,
just say his name and we'll bring him on.
James A. Moore.
James, are you there, sir?
How are you, guys?
We're good. How are you?
Can't complain. I've been stalked. That's off my bucket list.
But did you realize that that's like 84% of people who are killed by the stalkers are killed by the stalkers?
Oh,
so be frightened. There's a statistic.
Well,
for
I mean,
you.
I've seen her picture. She's got a good poker face going, but I think I can take her.
I don't know, scary.
She's had a couple of drinks down, and she's formidable. I tell you, formidable. What a great word!
I love that word. I'm sure.
So, from one James to another, it's a show of two Jameses tonight, which is kind of, it rarely happens. So you are a fantasy and horror author, over 40, I don't know, I don't care if I've read 40 novels, that is fantastic. How long have you been writing?
I've been writing since 1990 or so.
Wow.
I've been at it for a while.
Yeah.
I'm still 40 novels, that's sort of Stephen King territory, isn't it?
Sadly, while I've been compared to him looks-wise, my bank account is nowhere near that level.
Oh, well, that's no good, is it? Boo! buy the books,
so
people.
If just a million or so of your readers could buy all of my books.
Yes, or even if 10 million of our listeners bought one book each, there you go. That's retirement money, that.
Exactly.
There you go.
Then I could buy a house instead of renting.
There you go. So it is Fallen Gods Tide of War Book 2. So how many? Obviously it's a series. How many are scheduled for the series?
There's a total of 3 in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually just turned in the first draft of the third book about a month ago.
Oh wow!
I'm waiting to hear back from the editors, which I'm sure will be absolutely terrifying.
Do you know, that's always a scary moment where you've polished it. This is a perfect script, perfect. And it comes back, and there's something on every line. I mean, it happens to all of us, yeah. I didn't spot that either. Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I know. It's so, so extreme.
It's always an interesting game.
Yeah. I mean, it's a necessary part of the process, but it's probably the most painful.
We definitely become blind to our own mistakes, though. Our brain puts in what it's supposed to say. And, you know, I remember just with Dark Musings, it's poetry. And I had been over these poems, you know, some of them 100 times, I swear. And yet it still came back from the editor with, you know, there's a missing word here. And I'm like, how did I not see that? You know, but it happened really bad.
You really can't after a while. And I mean that. You just can't. It's not possible to see it.
Yeah, that's why you need an editor. So you need someone. I mean, I with all of my novels, you know, I've done the same. I know Tenebrae, and I went through that a dozen or so times at least, and it came back, and there was even after it was published, there was a couple of readers picked up on the odd one. How did that not get picked up? You know, I mean, the editor should have picked that up, but you know, it was like, I've read it how many times? Yeah, I think your brain does, because you wrote it, your brain knows what it's meant to say. So it fills in the gaps. So a missing word or a bad bit of punctuation, it just skips merrily over it.
And you're pretty clean to begin with, James. You really are. I've edited for you before, and, you know, it's not, I don't find mistakes quite often. So, yeah, I can imagine how, you know, you get something back and you have, you know, red marks. Hey, what happened? When did this happen?
Yeah,
so,
you think that maybe you start to think maybe the editor did it just to justify the pay, you know. Yeah. Well, it's like you said, I mean, you did the editing on the Jacob Floyd book, The Pleasure Hunt. And I think throughout the whole manuscript, there's like, I think, two typos, and that was it. I mean, it was so clean. It was preternatural. It really was.
Yeah, there were times I forgot what I was doing. You know, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be working on this because
Well, that's the thing. You end up just reading it. And then I guess that's how you then miss it, because your brain goes into reading mode as opposed to editing mode, so.
Oh, gosh,
scary,
I'll say
stuff.
That. Yeah, definitely, definitely. But it was fun, though. It was fun. It was a good book.
Oh, it was, yeah.
So I want to hear more about your book. There's two Jameses here, so
just call me Jim.
More? Jim, okay.
I actually write
okay.
under James, but I answer to Jim most of the time.
Ah, okay.
Well, that makes life easier.
Oh, yeah.
Although you may have to remind me which one I am from time to time, because I just get confused. You know that. Easily confused.
I think that comes with the territory of being a writer. I really do.
Probably.
Confused?
Yeah. Oh, that's... Because I profoundly love the idea of having insurance, I actually work at Starbucks. And one of the things you have to do at Starbucks is try to remember all your customers' names.
Oh, God.
Well, I can write four books at the same time and keep all the characters without a problem, while reading four books at the same time and keep all those characters without a problem. Introduce me to five people and I lose every single name inside of 10 minutes. I have customers I've been dealing with for 3 years and I still have to ask them every day what their name is.
Oh my goodness. Awesome. I am exactly the same. I honestly firmly believe that everybody should have to wear a name tag all the time ever. Because somebody will introduce me... They'll introduce themselves to me, and literally the instant it's left their mouth, I've forgotten it. Who the hell are you? I don't. And, you know, you try to fish for it. You know, it's nice to. And I got to the point now. I just said, "What was your name again?" I forgot.
Life is too short. Just ask again.
What is it? Give us a clue. You know.
You need to tell us more about your book. That's, you know, I want to know more about the series.
Well, okay. Yeah. This is one of those series that started out kind of as a, I'm sitting here watching an old movie and going, well, that doesn't make sense. And what I thought was, I was watching King Kong. It's the scene where Fay Wray is captured. She's tied to the post. King Kong comes along and the hero comes along and saves her just in time. And all that happens is King Kong gets a little ticked and chases after him, which, you know, bad idea. But I got to thinking about all the Tarzan movies where you've had the exact same scenario back in the 40s and 50s. And I thought, why is it that whenever they take the sacrifice from the gods don't get pissy about it? So I decided to set up a story where that's exactly what happened. Man's entire family is taken to sacrifice. He tries to stop the sacrifice, and the gods get pissed and decide it's time to end the world.
Wow. Interesting.
Cool. That's
so the story
concept.
Is there, this poor bastard trying to save the world that's in the process of trying to end. By the way, his entire family dies horribly in the first 10 pages, so.
Oh, my God.
Oh, spoiler alert.
He's not having a good week.
No.
Do you know, that would probably spoil my afternoon, you know, being brutally murdered. So is this set on Earth? Is it set on alternate universe?
Complete utter fantasy setting, all new world.
Okay.
Awesome.
Which is good, because, you know, before it's done, the landscape will change drastically.
We watched those movies, read books, you know, when I was a kid, you know, the ones where, you know, the aliens destroy the Earth and that, and then, you know, you watch the film, you're absorbed in the film, and then, of course, the film's over and you come out of the movie theatre and everything's the same. And it kind of spoils it for me. You know, I've just sat for 2 hours and watched the aliens destroy, you know, they've blown the White House up, they've destroyed every London landmark. They always go for London. Every time there's an invasion, the aliens come down, right, we've got the White House at London. You know, I want to get the eye, Big Ben. There's so many landmarks in a short space of, that it's easy. You just throw a couple of, you know, neutron missiles or whatever, throw lasers, and they get everything. You know, they've got these Big Ben and the Tower of London and the Buckingham Palace, and they're all sort of next door to each, and it's lazy, to be honest with you. And so you come out of the movie theatre and everything's the same, and it's just like, whereas, like you say, we on other worlds, you can, you know, it keeps your mind in that. I suppose that's where Star Wars came in. You know, it was a galaxy far, far away, etc. You know, and it keeps your mind in that world, which I do like. You know, I guess lines you up nicely for the sequel. I mean, that was the thing with Independence Day. You know, the sequel came out and everything was totally rebuilt just how it was before. And then it was all destroyed again. I thought, seriously, you know, again? They're destroying the new White House that's been built, 25 years now, and they've destroyed it. Yeah, great. Thanks.
I like that they use the exact same architect for rebuilding the White House.
Yeah. When was the White House originally built, though? Maybe, to be fair, they probably had the blueprints lying around somewhere. Yeah. Oh, let's just knock up another one. Shall we build something different? No, I just want that, you know, I just want the same one. Although, to be fair, had Trump been president when that had happened, it would have been
God.
A big sort of gold, Playboy-esque type pink and gold mansion with flamingos and bareback sides all over it, you know. But
I think now that he's in charge of the known universe, it would have been a giant phallic symbol, yeah.
Well, to be fair, he is. He is a giant phallic symbol, as we all know. So it's just a statue of himself, really.
That's
true.
Oh,
God.
Yeah. I mean, he's such a knob now that I'm surprised when he's on NBC they don't have to pixel him out.
I'm waiting for them to start photoshopping him onto the body of Adonis.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of this latest health thing? You know, he said was he 239 pounds?
Oh, my God. Ridiculous.
No.
Yeah,
I'm
6 foot one. I'm 6 foot one and currently 210 pounds.
Uh-huh.
He's 6 foot three and 238 pounds.
Yeah.
There's a very large air bladder somewhere in there.
They compared him with, you know, some sort of people of the same, similar, of the same height, you know.
There's no way.
No. The man is grotesquely obese. I mean, just look at him. I mean, he's just. But to be fair, you know, keep it up, Trump, because with a bit of luck, he'll just eat himself to death and then we won't have to worry about it anymore.
Maybe if we could just get him to try that Tide Pod Challenge.
Oh, gosh, that too. There's just awful right now.
If that is not total irrefutable evidence of Darwinism, I don't know what is. I really don't.
Thank you.
That was exactly what I thought when I saw that. Yeah, that is natural selection at work, along with the guy who keeps a pet tiger in his apartment and you know, all these just dumbass people. In fact, there's one, some guy just setting fire to himself. You have at it, mate. You do that. Because you do that because you are not going to reproduce. Those genes stop with you, mate. That's it. End of. Brilliant. Nice one. I love it.
I could sort of understand if it was a 10-year-old kid doing the Tide Pod Challenge.
I still... Because
you're stupid at 10. But at 18 or more, you're not supposed to be stupid anymore.
I once ate some washing powder for a bear. I mean, just like a spoon. as you do. But then, like you say, I was like 11 at the time, so fair enough. I used to eat any raw eggs and bits of chicken giblets and anything for a bear, you know. If there's a couple of bob in it, I'd do it. I'd eat it. So, but
no,
yeah, when they're adults, I mean, seriously, you know, I mean, don't eat those.
Yeah. Public service announcement from the Panic Room. Don't eat the Tide Pod things. No.
Try a different brand. Try a generic brand. Persil. Persil's a good brand. Or you could graduate onto, you know, the little dishwasher pods. I bet they're dead tasty.
Chew on an SOS pad for a while.
Some of those smell really good, though. They have that... They do. Some of them smell really good. They had the one grapefruit smell, and when I was doing dishes, I couldn't stop, like, you know, smelling. Maybe that's what's wrong with me. Never mind. But I wasn't eating them.
Have you been drinking the dish soap again, Xtina?
No, just sniffing it.
we've talked about this before, haven't we?
Just sniffing it. I promise.
It's a gateway detergent, to be honest. Yeah. The dishwasher, you know, they create all these. They get you hooked with. I always got grapefruit and pomegranate. Some beautiful. I mean, they're great. It's like you say, you start, and before you know it, you're eating Tide Pods. You know, it is a slippery slope to detergent abuse. So, anybody listening out there, don't just say no.
Yeah, go back to things that are safe for you, like cocaine. It's probably better for you at the end of the day. No, wait. Never mind.
Yes, it's not detergent. Oh. Something. I mean, cocaine is supposed to go up your nose. Detergent is not. So maybe there's something in that.
Oh, I did. I did see one of those memes or whatever that, you know, said, you know, oh, you're still doing the Tide Pod thing, and then it had lines of like the powdered soap, and oh my God. I thought that was just bad taste. I did. I wasn't. I can't even. Nothing. I can't comment or like or anything. I just passed right by. So.
Well, it's funny. I actually joined. I was invited to join. It's a Facebook group, which is just offensive memes, and I can't repeat any of them here on the air because they are really, literally, just so offensive, but they're so funny. I mean, they're really funny.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask. You laugh, though, don't you?
Oh yeah, I contribute. It's great because it's just like,
oh God,
no censorship, just go for it, you know. Well, it's people, you know, humor, you know, people say, oh, you can't joke about this guy too soon, but you know, it's human nature. We joke about what terrifies us. It's the same as writers. We write about what frightens us. If we didn't, it just wouldn't work, you know. And, you know, we're all frightened of death, you know. Things like, you know, terrorist attacks and Kim Jong-il. We poke fun of Kim Jong-il and Ung on this show. Trump scares the absolute bejesus out of me, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. But we joke about them because what else do you do? You know, it's how we deal with what terrifies us, you know. So let's have at it. It's just Trump's got no sense of humor. That's the problem. He likes to dish it out, but the minute somebody calls him, you know, fatty, fatty toad boy, he gets all pissy and tries to take away the freedom of the press. Well, you know. That's what you get.
The first, the last.
He will be. I actually do describe him as America's last president because I think that's where we're going. So there you go. What a great idea of mine. you know, 7 years, just over 7.5 years ago now. Let's move the family, you know, let's move the kids and everything. Let's go to America, the land of opportunity, the land of the free. Bit of a mistake, I'm beginning to think now. In the land of the bomb.
Okay, what was going through your head? You actively left Britain to come here.
I tell you something,
so phenomenal.
No, it is not. Britain, and again, I'm going to sound a little bit racist here, Britain is so clogged up with immigrants because of the socialist government that was in power for 13 years. The health service is crumbling. All the infrastructure is crumbling. The schools can't cope. The country's a mess. The government's a mess. It's just one big screw up. The Brexit thing, which was supposed to be a big shining hope of, you know, newness, that seems to be wobbling now because of indecisions,
yeah.
And the government just can't deal with it right, and there's too much opposition. I mean, it's just a mess. And sadly, that's the British way. You know, we can't make decisions awfully well. You know, it's like, oh, let's do the well, and then we'll overthink it. We'll overthink, oh, let's leave Europe. Yeah, let's vote to leave Europe. And then it's all, well, was it the right decision? Okay, it got majority vote, so... But then again, you know, Hillary Clinton got a majority vote here, and we got Trump, so I guess democracy really is a bit of a sham, I think, democracy, between you and... between
well,
us girls,
I'm
you know.
I'm going to go with the same thing that I've said to dozens and dozens of people, at least half of whom disagree with me. Get rid of the Electoral College. It doesn't work anymore. It hasn't worked in over 100 years. Just stop.
Yeah, I agree.
I just don't understand that. I mean, it's just like, okay, you know, we'll just overrule the popular vote. You know, it doesn't count. So why do people... And then they have a go at people for not voting. Well, why should we? Because we vote,
exactly.
And then you just ignore it.
Yeah.
I mean,
what I love is
a great...
look at you as if you have lost your mind and say, no, you don't understand. The Electoral College balances it out for all the different states. No, you don't understand. That was necessary 100 years ago. But now we have the information age, and things can be taken care of instantaneously.
Yeah.
You don't have to take a horseback from Texas and Kansas to get up to D.C. to explain who was actually voted for.
Yeah.
You can do it all on this magical thing called a phone.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that is right. I mean, it's funny. I mean, we used to... I mean, he's not in power now, actually. He was just the victim of a coup. Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, or Rhodesia, as it was when I was a boy. His attitude was great. I mean, he clung on to power for a long, long time. Was it 40-odd years? And it's what I came to call it, the Mugabe defense. They would have an election, and he would lose. And he would say, no, I haven't. Mr. Mugabe, you've lost the vote. No, I haven't. And quote unquote, he said, I haven't lost. It's just that people have voted incorrectly. And then he would demand another vote. And then they would intimidate people. They would beat up the opposition and imprison them and keep going until, Mugabe's won. He's got like 99% of the vote, you know. But they would say, look, you've lost. You've got to leave power. No, I haven't. And he clung on to power just by refusing to move. You know,
wow.
It was just like, and I can see Donald Trump doing that. He'll get to 4 years or whatever, or they'll impeach him or whatever. So you've got to leave the White House. No, I'm not. And he'll just see him sort of, you know, bunkering himself up in the Oval Office there with his snacks, and just refusing to come out for another 4 years.
Oh, that's right.
So that's the future. This is a worry.
Yeah, but that is the mentality, though. He is like a little spoiled 6-year-old or something.
Oh,
definitely I could see that.
If only he was that mature, Christina. If only.
we had what, 30,000 or 40,000 people show up right after the election to protest. I think they might actually pull his butt out of the house. He tried to overstaying his welcome.
Oh, wow.
Well, he would so look at the crowd I've pulled. Look at the crowd that have come out for me. And he'll just think he's Mr. Popular. Oh,
well,
dear me. Enough politics. Enough
I know.
Politics.
I was just going to say, I wanted to get back to talking about Tides of War. And, you know, my favorite part pretty much of the show is getting to the reading, because, you know, then I can, because then I can drink more. So that's,
I think she can open another bottle, that's why.
It's kind of a selfish, you know, thing.
It's the only reason, it's the only reason we have the reading, to be honest, is so that you can drink more.
Well, I don't know about only reason, but that's definitely really high up there. It's my favorite time. I can sit back and drink while the guest reads, and, you know, they don't know that I'm drinking. But now that I've told everybody, everybody knows that Kimmy is drinking during the reading.
And you're still going to do it.
Sometimes you just got to get drunk.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but every week?
You say all the time that I do not have a problem with drinking. I do it very well.
No,
I
you
don't
do
know.
Not. You can drink incredibly well. You know, have no
yes,
problem
exactly.
drinking at all, which is great. So, well done you.
Thank you.
Welcome. So, Jim, are you ready? Are you ready to do the reading, sir?
I am ready to do the reading.
Yay!
Okay. Do you need us to give us a little bit of background to where we're coming?
I will indeed. So, in the Tides of War books, the gods have gone mad and are trying to destroy the world, and the demons, who are defined as basically godlings, they're not quite all the way up there yet, but they'd like to be, are doing their best to take advantage of the situation. What you have now is an interlude with the demon Oriya. Oriya is one of the big movers and shakers. It's up in the air as to whether or not he started this entire Armageddon thing. So, in this scene, you have Oriya dealing with some of the Gra'kul, who are the pale white people who've been responsible for the sacrifices the entire time. And he was given some of them as a tribute by a man who's trying to buy his way out of the end of the world. And so
okay.
Here we are.
Okay,
go for it.
Oriya moved through his endless forest of blooms and plants, touching this blossom or that leaf, caressing the thorns that were too soft to ever hope to cut his flesh. Somewhere beyond his prison, the slavers had made sacrifices in his name, and with each person they killed, he felt his power grow. The spirits bound to his name did not dissipate or move on. Instead, they were drawn to his location, dragged through the endless darkness between the realms, and forced to come to him. Gods ate their sacrifices. Demons did not. Or at least he did not. His followers slept, content with their actions. He was content too, but he did not sleep. He never slept. Instead, he moved to the Hikishi in his possession and the Gra'kul women who had been brought to him as sacrifices. The Hikishi, the undying, were currently flayed open and left on the ground, their hides held by thorns as thick as daggers that cut into the leathery surface of their bodies. He had no idea how the undying worked until he opened their bodies and pulled out the barely living creatures inside of them. The humanoid shapes within did not survive long away from the living cloaks of the Hikishi. Several of the women stared at him, horrified. He did not hide his true shape from them. They dealt with gods and sacrifices, so they were used to the more visceral parts of his form. What are you doing? The gods will be angry. The woman that spoke was older than most of the others around him. She barely looked different to the human eye, but Oriya was not human, and he saw things differently. They are already angry. And I have been punished for a very long time. What will they do? Imprison me? The undying are sacred, she protested, even as he touched the first of the hides and felt to try to pull away from him. Even dormant, the things understood that he was an enemy. Not to me. The woman flashed and flinched at the tone of his words. One of his many hands reached out and gripped the Gra'kul's chin firmly. Your kind has told countless lies. Did you know that? The people of the Five Kingdoms mostly believe that the Hikishi are called Gra'kul because your kind has spread that lie. They spread it because words, especially names, sometimes have power, and better to risk all of your kind than even one of the undying. He leaned closer to her, and she stared into the closest of his multifaceted eyes. Nothing to say to that? Very well, I will speak and explain. The gods did not create you. They altered you to suit their needs. That is a complicated trick, to be sure, but even I can do that. And I cannot do what most gods can do. I cannot create. I don't understand. She spoke with muffled words, but he still had a grip on her chin. Be patient, and I will show you. The Hikishi were created by the gods. They were formed from nothing, given shape by the gods as surely as the gods decided to have children. They were born into your world because the gods wanted voices to work for them. They're amazing creatures. They are truly undying. Burn them away and they will reform. Cut them apart and bury them in a dozen different places, and as soon as the parts are put back together, they will rise again. You know this. Some of your own sacrifice yourselves that they might have bodies again. But while I cannot make life, I can change it. Moriah shifted then. He became smaller and paler until he looked like a male of the Gracul. Not just any male, but this one's life mate. A small blessing or curse, depending on perspective. The woman whose chin he held saw him and blinked away angry tears, wounded by his gesture. You see, this is why I find your kind so fascinating. I give you a face drawn from your best memories, and you hate me all the more for it. I wonder if that is a choice or if the gods reshaped you so that you have to be loyal to them. He said nothing but continued to glare. Be lucky that I am feeling this time alone. I'll not kill you just yet, but soon enough I might change my mind. He sighed. Or I might change you so that you obey me as you have your gods. She said nothing. Very well, let me show you something. While mortals could not kill your Hitishi, I could if I worked hard enough. I would rather not expend the effort, or at least not in that way. There are 12 of these creatures. I have 3 of them, 1/4 of their entire numbers. I will make them my servants. I will offer them back to your world. But first, I will change them to suit my needs. The gods will do nothing. She flinched as he roared, but her face remained held in his grip. They have made their prison well, but they have not stripped my powers from me. That is beyond them. I am trapped here, but I do not wish to be seen by the gods, and so I have stolen away their ability to see here. Even your Hitishi cannot let them see into my realm. Here, I am the god. He sighed and let go of her chin. I cannot create, but I can change things as I must. He moved away from where she stood watching. There had been several attempts by her and her sisters to run from him, and so eventually he simply had the vines wrapped tightly around the lower halves of their bodies. She continued to work at the fake plants, and they continued to remain unmoved. Look upon the children of your gods and watch how I make them my own. He touched the first of the heavy forms, and she shrieked, a sound that was completely unnatural, a hiss of ice on a hot skillet, a roar of a bear and a howling wind all rolled into one horrid cacophony. The flesh that he touched blackened. It did not burn, but it changed. The fur that covered the flesh fell out, and the hide thickened even more. Each beast must have a name. You were Lin From, child of the gods. Now you are Abrasid, the first bloom. The flesh cloak rose and shuddered. Araya caught the thing in his hands and smiled, moving closer to his captive audience. Should it be your honor to bear the first of my children? She shuddered and shook her head, whispering prayers to the gods. They cannot hear you here. They cannot answer you. Only I can offer you mercy. He moved past her and looked at one of the others. She was younger, barely entering the first blossom of adulthood. He smiled and cast the cloak at her. Abrasid took her form as the Hitishi had always taken host, and the wretch screamed her agonies into the air. The insect that Araya grabbed was small and hard-shelled. He held it in his palm and changed it, making it something different than it had ever been before. His smile was wide and chilling to the woman as he spoke with. I cannot leave my poor children defenseless against the Hitishi. He moved his hand to the cowled face of the thing he called Abrasid and blew his newly changed pet into the thing's maw. The woman watched, horrified, as the beast swallowed the offering. Abrasid staggered and reeled, shivered and changed. Whatever was happening was painful, and the woman once more made a prayer to the gods that could not hear her, begging that the creature be granted mercy. Araya smiled indulgently as he touched the second of the Hikishi. I told you, they cannot hear your words and pleas. If you would like mercy, you should pray to me. She did not listen. So when he was done altering the third of the Hikishi into one of his children, he settled the living nightmare on her shoulder and let it take her. You were Bagra Nisht, now you are Garisade, my third bloom. He fed the seeds into the creature's mouth and continued his manipulation of spirit and flesh alike. We will have fun, my children. You will get me from this place. It is a time for gods to fall and demons to rise. Without a word, the newly reborn children moved toward the hidden doorway between the worlds and exited behind their creator. He nodded, satisfied with his plans. Then he looked at the Gracul left to him and shook his head. What shall I do with you? They did not answer him. After a time, he smiled. I know just the thing. The changes he made were painful. All the Gracul screamed as they were transformed. And Araya listened and was pleased.
And wow, awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. Awesome.
Thank you.
I like that. Quick question. How do you come up with the names? I mean, that was the fantastical names.
I wanted to
names.
Ask the same thing.
I struggle with names.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people that go nuts trying to figure out names, and I just kind of yank them out of the air.
I like the Hikishi thing. That was kind of cool. Well, all of them were, but that one really stuck out.
Yeah, great. I think that's probably why I could never write a fantasy or anything like that, because I just couldn't think of the names. I have to.
It's my secret.
I've got my eldest son. He's 24 now. Right? His graduation booklet. And I actually rifle through that for names. I have it on my desk, so when I get to store, I need a name, and I'll just sort of combine bits of names from that. That's where they all come from.
There you go.
Because I'm awful. I envy you. I really do.
That is like a real.
Anywho.
Oh, yeah.
it just brought the whole thing to life, whole new world, whole universe to life, which is awesome. It's his job, really, so we expect him to be good at it. But that was brilliant. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed
that.
Do you have to have read the first book to sort of? I mean, do they stand alone, or you have to follow the series?
As a general rule, I try to make it so you can read them without. But in this case, I would say yes, you really do kind of have to have read it. I give you a hint, but there's a lot going on and a lot of names. If you haven't read the first book, you'll have no idea who these people are.
They're like a glossary. There should be like a glossary that has all the names and stuff, because otherwise, or I would just have to message you an awful lot and be like, okay, what does this mean again?
Who's he again? Who's he again? What's he doing?
I don't actually have a glossary in the book.
Yeah,
I don't have a glossary in the book, and they frankly probably should have a glossary.
Yeah,
but I've got my own list at home, so I can keep track of them myself.
Yeah, I say you could maybe put it up on your website, so people go to your website to check out who's who and who's doing what and how it all relates. So that'd be a good idea. I would, like you say, a book like that, I would need to refer to any more than a few characters, and I start struggling. who the hell is that again? That's why I guess that's why I didn't get into Game of Thrones, because I don't know who's who. What's going on?
I had with Lord of the Rings. There are so many names in that book.
Don't they change names as well? Some realms they're called by something else, and then he's got a nickname. Oh, seriously? What? You stick to one bloody name, will you? Goodness. Showing off. Actually, Tolkien, showing off.
How many names do you need?
Not impressed. Not impressed, Bucko.
We need to go to a little break here. Shush, I'm talking. Jim, you can't go anywhere, so just hang on, and we're going to a little break, and I have to drink more, and James has to take a wee. I have to let everybody know that, because you always talk about my
thank
drinking,
you.
So.
You're welcome. Thank you. It's kind of polar opposites, isn't it, really? Well, I was just going to say, we do commercials, then we're going to do the break. I've specifically picked the tune for tonight as a special, special treat to all our listeners, and I hope you enjoy it. So here we go.
The Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Yeah. picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you. You answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Cellophane flowers of yellow and green towering over your head. Look for the girl with a sun in her eyes. And she's gone!
She's gone! She's gone!
Past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you away. Climb in the back with your head in the clouds, and you're gone!
Picture yourself on a train in a station with plasticine porters, with looking glass ties. Suddenly, someone is there at the turnstile. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
I told you it was a special treat, didn't I? That was William Shatner with Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. He's the man, a big, big fan, absolutely superstar. What a great guy. Only he could get away with that bilge, to be honest with you. I hear John Lennon rolling.
Bilge is actually the right word.
Wasn't it just? It was just, as you said, I mean, his interpretation of Rocket Man was also a classic. We'll see if we can dig that one out for another time. But brilliant. I mean, it's a great song as it is, but to hear Shatner murdering it like that was just, it's just a rare treat.
Not that this has anything to do with anything, but I had a dog, a Rottweiler, and her name was Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, and we called her Lucy.
That's great. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Not really. Speaking of things a little more interesting than that, it's that time of the evening. It is that we have.
Hey, looks like it's time to review something. Oh no!
It's only Becky the reviewer. How are you, Mom?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm fine too. How are y'all? So, fixing to do some reviewing for us, y'all.
Fixing.
Yes, sir, I am.
Fixing everything in Texas.
I sure
is fixing.
I
fixed
fixings. To do stuff too. Yeah, we can fix.
I'm fixing to, fixing to get some fixings. I love it. So, Becky, what do you have for us this evening?
Oh, we're going to talk about a book that just was released today. It's called Sick House, and it's by Jeff Strand. It's self-published.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Jeff Strand, that hack.
Yeah. We kind of like him.
We do, yeah.
Well, I like him enough to have written a book with him, so, you know.
I do know. I'm reading that book, by the way. I wanted to have it done by the time you got on the show, but I'm actually reading it right now, and it's really good.
I see how it is. You're going to review the book that came out today, but not the one that we came out with last year. I see how it is.
I read Sick House. I finished Sick House already. So, your book. No, I have to read the first one. I can't read number two. Well, you're confusing me. I
promise
another
I will read it and review it for you.
Okay.
Oh. This is self-published, and oh my gosh, it is amazing. I really, 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 really loved it. And in fact, he asked me if I had any critique at all, and I told him, I said, I don't know of anything at all that I would change. Nothing.
Yeah.
I love the characters. I love the humor, you know, that he throws in here and there. And
I would probably change the author.
By the way, Jim, you can tell him when you talk to him next that you can keep your spleen. Your spleen is fine because you've been an amazing guest tonight, so your spleen is good.
I appreciate that. So let's be honest, Jeff Strand attacking me is like a chihuahua going after a St. Bernard. It's just, there's a lot of yipping going on, but not much action.
I hope he's listening. I do. No, but I agree with Becky. That book was amazing, and there were times when I was reading it, and I had to remind myself to keep breathing. I would, you know, I would notice that, you know, my hands were in tight fists, and I was like, oh, okay, I can start breathing again, you know, because it was great. It was great all the way through it, and even for a horror book, I know that the very last page and the very last line, I smiled. I was like, oh, that's an awesome ending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was just great. It was.
Now, is this his typical comedy horror blend, or is this one actually more horror?
You know, not as much as some of the other books. There are funny moments, but not nearly. It's more scary. It really is. I mean,
it really is.
Yeah, I laughed out loud many, many times in a bunch of his other books, and I chuckled, and there were definitely humorous moments, but not. It was more horror. This book was definitely more horror. It was good.
Yes.
I actually have a bone to pick with Jeff because I keep wanting him to do more of the Andrew Mayhem books and he won't do it.
He should.
And those
books
are just incredible. If you've never read them, you should.
Which ones are these?
The Andrew Mayhem books.
Oh,
which are the
you
ones
know what?
You started with? Yeah.
Yeah, I started with the Grave Robber dude, that one, that first book. I can't remember what it's called. I'm so sorry.
Grave Robbers Wanted, no experience necessary.
And then I had to read something. I had to read something for, I forget why. But I am reading it, and, oh, my gosh, it is funny. It is funny. But the first book I read by him was Blister, and that was because Becky recommended it. And I remember writing the review for that book, and the title of the review was, "This is how you write a book," because it had me laughing so much. I was cracking up. I don't think I had ever had that experience before, especially reading, you know, kind of horror stuff. So that was really cool. So,
well, if you want one that's really, really just pure horror and suspense by him, read Pressure.
Oh, yeah. I have that one. I haven't read it yet, but I do have that one. And I want to say with the Haunted Forest Tour, do I have the name right? I think I do.
Yeah.
That one starts out, it doesn't, you don't even get a chance to, you know, get it, it just starts right out with action, which is really cool, it is, so that is proving to be a really, really interesting book. I'm getting a kind of a Jurassic feel right now, you know, like Jurassic Park or something, it's kind of cool.
Oh, that's very deliberate, yeah.
Well,
you're stuck in the middle of a place you're not going to get out of easily, and everything goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, I'm
pretty much summarizes the plot.
I'm pretty much still in the beginning. I mean, we just got on the tour, and you know, pretty much, I think everything has gone black or something like that. And the I forget her name, Susan, is that her name? The tour guide chick, like, you know, she's her voice is, you know, or whatever. She's acting strange, so they're thinking something is actually really wrong. And that's where I'm at in it. So I'm anxious to read more, and I'll probably do that tonight if I haven't drank too much. Yeah, right. So what rating would you give Sick House, Becky?
A 10 out of 10, without a question. I wrote a review for it on my blog today, and that's posted on Facebook and online and Twitter and everywhere. It's really phenomenal. I mean, I teased him when I talked to him about it. I said, you know, I started reading it about 10 o'clock one night, and I looked up, and it was 4 a.m. I said,
wow.
And the first thing I said was, damn it, Jeff, you kept me up all night again. And then I giggled, you know, and I told him that. And he was like, I'm sorry. And I was like, no, don't be, you know. It doesn't happen like that very often, you know, that I'm totally lost. But this book is just, it really was amazing. And you know, from the, I had no idea where he was going with it. I mean, there were two storylines that he just ran them together seamlessly. They were just perfect. And I really was impressed. And it, I mean, everything he writes is good. And, but this was just, this could easily, even though it's January, this could easily be my book of the year.
Awesome. I really enjoyed it too, and we have to start, you know, he was supposed to be on the show right, you know, it's around when that book came out, so I'll have to see what I can do to get him on soon.
Yeah.
And then you'll have to call and say hi, Jim, and, you know, talk to him about this whole spleen incident and, you know, because I'm just still picturing the chihuahua yapping, and it's kind of funny.
Well, we'll be seeing each other in July. I might have to see about making a wish.
Yeah, you'll definitely have to put him in his place.
I think I will.
I'll take him down a peg or two.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Becky, for your review.
You're welcome.
Yeah, all right, Gabriel.
Okay, thank you, Becky. Thank you.
Cool. I'll talk to you all next week.
Yeah.
Bye, Becky. Bye.
Take care.
There we go. Bless us. Bless us. Always happy.
Oh, you're doing that demon thing, James, and it's, you know, I think it gets worse when you decide you're gonna, you know, mute yourself during, you know, during the reading or something. For some reason, it comes quicker than normal. But he does this robotic, you know, creepy demon thing every so often. Usually, it's not till the very end of the show, but this time it happened now. So while it's just me and you, Jim, how about doing 11 questions with me? Do you want to do that? I didn't prep you for it earlier.
Absolutely.
So yay. he's gonna be totally, yeah, these are new questions for us too, or for me. So do we have the little jingle, James? Yay.
And now 11 questions.
Okay, number one, the best or worst movie you ever saw?
Wow, that's a tough one. The worst movie I ever saw was Return to Salem's Lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just an abomination. If you have not seen that, you have not missed anything.
Awesome.
The closest thing you have to a vampire in this is a really bad rubber mask and a cape.
That's
and I watched it once and was utterly horrified that anybody could make a movie that bad. It makes Plan 9 from Outer Space look like artwork.
Do you have a best? It says best or worst, so maybe you don't have to have both. Let's see.
There's so many. For overall movies, I'll say It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah? That is a nice
I think
movie.
That movie is incredible.
Oh, I won't judge you too
it's
harshly.
Fear,
with
that. It's got nightmares. It's got miserable depression, the absolute height of terror, and ecstasy of redemption.
That's a good answer. I like that. What was the first grown-up horror novel you read?
Stephen King's The Stand.
Ooh. Do you know I have not read that book? I read a lot of Stephen King, a whole lot, but I've never read that one. You know, there was, I think it was something to do with the blurb when I read what it was about and knew that whatever this disease thingy was, I don't know a whole lot about it, but whatever this thing was, they were drowning in their own snot. That was really gross to me. So that's why I never read it. And that stupid reason.
It's not a pretty image book, but it's a really good book. However, yeah. And King has said this himself, but I'm going to back it up again. Don't read the unabridged version.
Ah, okay.
It's got 50,000 words you just don't need. Read the version that came out first, the one where they cut all that garbage out.
It was still a crazy long book, whichever one you choose, wasn't it? I mean,
oh, absolutely,
it
yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
I'll take that into consideration. What's your favorite cuss word, number 3?
Shit.
Is it really?
It just goes all over the place and works for everything.
I don't think that's one I use very often. I do the F-bomb quite frequently, I think. Unless I'm calling the boyfriend an ass, I do that quite frequently too. But what would be the worst way you can imagine yourself dying?
Fire.
Oh, that's yeah. Burning
alive, it would suck a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I get a little burn from the stove on. I have one right now, actually, on my knuckle, and that hurt like hell. So there's no way I could, you know, no, that would be awful. Okay, what was your very first pet?
My very first pet was a dog named Pips, short for Pipsqueak.
Oh,
a mutt combination of Collie and German Shepherd, and she was wonderful.
Let's see, who's your biggest influence, either writing or in life generally?
My biggest influence in life would be comic books. Awesome. We'll give a heavy lean towards Superman and Spider-Man because they have the right moral compass for me. My biggest influence in books would definitely be Stephen King.
Awesome, good answer. This is a good one. If you were God for a day, what would you do?
And a lot of the problems the world is going through, including the current presidency.
Woohoo! I'm backing you for God. Can we hire him or is it... yeah, like a button or something. Okay, who or what is the crappiest horror supernatural being? I don't remember ever asking that question before, James. But anyway,
the crappiest is in the worst written, or the crappiest is in the worst.
Either or. Your choice.
Hmm. Friend from Robert McCammon's Swan Song.
Okay.
Just a
I have no
friend.
Idea what that is.
It's Robert McCammon's version of The Stand.
Both
of which, by the way, are versions of The Apocalypse, and you should read them because they're amazing. But Friend
okay.
is a complete and utter dick without redemption.
Nice. If it were legal to do so, would you eat human flesh?
Nah. Why? I've heard it's not very tasty.
I don't know. I don't have it.
They like it.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I wouldn't eat it either. who is your favorite
take
member?
A chomp out of you. What's that?
The next question. Who is your favorite member of the British royal family?
Probably Prince Charles.
You know, I'm so glad you're the one answering these questions because I would have no answer for that one. None. I'm drawing a blank. I mean, I have no answer there. The Queen. That I could say the Queen, but that's all I have.
Well, the Queen is awesome, but Prince Charles has done his best for the position where he's just never going to get the respect he should. His kids get more respect than he does.
Okay. Which franchise, I guess, is your favorite? Halloween, Friday the 13th, Elm Street, Hellraiser, or Saw?
I'm going to go with Halloween.
Woo! That's my answer, too. I love Michael Myers. I do.
Oh, yeah.
Do you like the remakes, or do you like the originals better?
I think the remakes are a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think the originals are better.
Now, see, I guess if you judge them as two different entities, kind of, you know, because they're definitely the originals are great. But the remake, the Rob Zombie remake, man, I loved those movies. I seriously did. And every time I watched them, though, especially the first time, I really thought, you know, I am going to be demented. I'm going to be messed up in the head forever because of some of these scenes. But it was awesome. Let's see. What is your least favorite part of your writing process?
Starting it. starting.
Starting, really?
Starting. I have all sorts of ideas. I know what I want to say, but starting to say it is a challenge.
Good answer. And here's our bonus question, baseball or stamp collection?
Given a choice between the two, I would collect stamps.
Oh.
Yay.
No,
awesome.
Baseball. Which
awesome.
Reminds me that we're only about a month and a half or something away from spring training, and I'm very excited.
Oh, yay.
That will be the start of Baseball Corner with Xtina, so I'm very excited.
Do you know, that is one of the dullest moments on radio, I have to say. She's drones on about baseball for 5 minutes. And it is dull. It really is.
Well, this is going to be the Blue Jays' year. I can feel it. I can feel it.
I admire your optimism.
Right?
Well, last year wasn't, was it? It's just
No, we did
terrible
awful.
Last year.
Just awful last year. But the year before that, we got to the playoffs, so I was really woohoo excited. I can only hope that we do it again.
I still don't get why there's a World Series and no one else is invited. I don't get that. Sorry.
Well, I think it's interesting that my team, the Toronto Blue Jays, are in the American League. Why wouldn't they be in the International League? So that's kind of interesting to me. But, you know, what do I know? What do I know?
Nothing.
No.
You like the uniforms and the fact that they're Canadian. That's it.
You know, I do think that they're the best dressed team in the league. They really are. I don't know if they get their uniforms tailored better or something, but they you know, I do think that.
Moving on.
Along, yeah, exactly.
Swiftly.
Exactly.
So something far more interesting.
No. I want to thank you, Tim, for doing the...
Just a little bit.
There's
a new Halloween movie coming out this year, you know.
What? Say that again? There's a what?
There is a new Halloween movie coming out this year.
No.
Oh, really?
I did
not know that. Is that Rob Zombie again or someone else?
No, this is going back to the base.
Wow.
This is going back to Jamie Lee Curtis playing Lloyd Stroud all over. And, guy that played the original Michael Myers is supposed to reprise his role, too. Which could be interesting, because 30-odd years later, so he's going to be, like, hobbling as he walks in.
Not quite as scary, but...
You see him chasing the teenager through the forest, having to sit down for a minute and have a thermos of tea. And a lozenge.
Don't have to stop for a minute, guys. I think I ruptured something.
Yeah,
fell off.
Could you kill yourself with this machete? Because I just need a bit of a lie down.
Exactly.
I need a bit of a nap, if you don't mind.
That's great, though.
I didn't know. I mean, I with Xtina, I enjoyed the two Rob Zombie remakes, but that's good. There's supposed to be a new Hellraiser movie out as well this year, but I mean, they've been saying that for a couple of years now. But I'm kind of excited, but you know, a little bit trepid about that because after Hellraiser 4, they just all got very ropey, I'm afraid.
I was pretty good with stopping at 2. And even then, it's pushing a little bit for me.
Yeah. Oh, do you know, three was actually, I think, one of my favorites. So Hell on Earth was great. 4 was okay, Bloodline, but then it just got. Yeah,
I think because
1 was such an absolute, you know, perfection of a movie. It was just classic, but then it just all went a bit south.
Well, they could have done so much more with it. TV sticking out of his head, I was just kind of like, "What are you doing and why?"
I only recently, I think it was in October, it was the first time I saw the first Hellraiser movie, and that was only because I think James was pretty much not going to talk to me ever again unless I watched it.
I bullied you into it. I really did.
Yes. I enjoyed it, but I enjoyed it, but I wasn't as awed, I guess, as you were. But it was good, and I would watch another one, I suppose, you know, if I was forced again.
Well, I saw it.
Wow.
when it was out in the 80s, you know, back into the 80s and back in the old days of VHS. And I got it from the local Blockbuster. And to be honest, it was funny because I just read Books of Blood and I spotted Clive Barker's name on it. I thought, oh, it should be all right. And then I saw Andy Robinson, who played the killer in the first Dirty Harry film, funnily enough. So I thought, oh, it'll be all right then. And it was just so wildly different. It was just, I literally rewound the tape and watched it again straight off, which I don't think I've ever done before or since.
It doesn't
seem, you know,
where
it was,
I was when the movie came out, because I really loved all the horror movies back then. I used to watch anything I could find that was scary. So I have no idea why I kind of overlooked that franchise, but I totally did.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether it opened to limited release, but I completely missed it at the movies and just spotted it down the Blockbuster and thought, you know, oh, that looks interesting, you know, and yeah, a fantastic film.
Hmm.
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Speaking of Blockbusters, you know, we have a movie store here in town, and it's, you know, VHS and DVD, and I swear to you that it's just a front. Who goes to these places anymore? I mean, you have Redbox, and you know, everything is online.
Oh, I do.
Really?
I do.
Okay, well, fine.
Just to the point of contention with my girlfriend, she can't understand why I own so many DVDs. And I keep buying more of them.
No, I do.
Like,
I do
get all of this on the internet. I'm like, yes, I know, but what if the internet goes out and I have nothing?
You know? Oh, my God. I'm kind of that way with TV shows. If you know, the internet went out and cable went out, I could supply, I don't even know how many, you know, I have every single show you could think of every season, and it's like a weird obsession with me to have every season of, you know, and so many different kinds. I have reality, and I have, you know, horror and comedy and it, you know, anything. So yeah, I'm definitely right there with you. I give the same reasons too. What if, you know, the internet goes out and our cable goes out and you know, we can still watch TV.
What if Republicans destroy net neutrality and we can't get our shows anymore through streaming?
Oh my goodness me. Well, on the plus side, it means people read more books. So good news for us.
Right.
Well,
Well, that's the thing, is I have all these TV shows, and I honestly don't watch that much TV, which is kind of strange. But on the odd chance that everything goes out and I'm stuck, you know, watching TV, I can now do it for many years to come and not even watch anything over again. So, score.
Excellent.
I can watch the entire run of Buffy again for my one box set.
You did not say Buffy. I love Buffy. And I'm actually currently watching Buffy with a friend. And we are in season 4, I think. And I'm getting really excited because I love season 6. That was my absolute favorite Buffy season because I love Dark Willow. I do. She was just badass. And that season was awesome. There were so many good episodes in that season. We could have a whole show just on Buffy. At least I could, and I would be happy for it. So.
I can respect that.
Yeah. Were you a fan of Angel as well?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That first season was kind of weak, but it got better.
Yeah. See, I agree too. Like, when you get to season 4 of Buffy, then you have to start watching season 1 of Angel. And, you know, I'm watching going, I didn't really care for this episode that well. But it does. It does get a whole lot better. And by the time it's over with, you know, you're kind of are just invested in it as you were in Buffy. Although there were some really strange plot things going on in Angel. The whore Cordelia. What was that? What was his name? I can't remember, but Connor. There we go, Connor and Cordelia.
Yeah,
that was so just wrong. But I don't want to. It was still good though. The show was still good. But Buffy will always be my favorite. I want to be Buffy. I do.
That's fair.
Yeah, she's pretty kick ass. She is. I haven't seen
Getting crappy out of her virtually every week. Yeah, she has a pretty good life.
I did. I was a huge fan of Buffy. And, you know, now for Buffy, are you a Spike fan or Angel? You know, people are very, it's a good question, and people are very vocal about this. They're either, you know, Buffy and Angel forever or Buffy and Spike forever, and there's no room for arguments or anything, so.
Well, you know, he really couldn't be with her, so why?
Yeah,
that's the poor bastard.
I loved Spike. You know, and I even have my own arguments about that whole thing, because just because the first time they were together and did it, he turned all crazy and lost his soul because he had his first, you know, perfect moment of, you know, perfectness or whatever. You know, who says it's going to happen that way again? She could, like, you know, smack him in the face right before they, anyway.
Yeah, you know, there's having an argument, and then there's, oh, for God's sakes, he's trying to kill me and everybody I know again.
Yeah.
Well, I can see where the problem is there.
No, but I actually was a fan of her and Spike only because, you know, Angel loved her because he had a soul, because it was, you know, he was cursed with it. So it wasn't his choice, really. But Spike went out and, you know, got a soul for Buffy, you know. So he loved her even without a soul. He loved her. So that's why I was totally always Buffy and Spike forever. I definitely was. Are you taking a nap, James, or you have no Buffy?
No, I never watched it.
Oh,
no.
Okay,
never?
James, go watch Buffy. That's a direct way to catch that.
Oh, my heart.
Wouldn't that be a little bit creepy, a man of my age now?
Not at all.
My mom and me watched Buffy together.
It's creepy if you try hitting on Buffy as a man of your age.
Yeah, but to be fair, Sarah Michelle Gellar, she's rattling on a bit now. I mean, she's probably, you know, not that far behind us, to tell you the truth. So give it a go. No, I never saw it, which is strange.
Wow.
You think it'd be the sort of thing I would watch, but no, never did.
I didn't watch it when it was actually on TV, but I have all the DVDs now, of course. And that was the funny thing. I had a gift certificate to Best Buy, I think it was, and I wanted a TV show. And I went there to get Charmed, and they didn't have Charmed. So I picked up a season of Buffy, and I loved it so much. And I ended up loving it way more than I loved Charmed. I did, so it was definitely a good choice.
Excellent. Excellent. So I didn't. I'm not really one for sort of long series as like that. I just don't.
Yeah.
I don't think I don't commit very well. I mean, the last one I really did commit well to was Breaking Bad, and I've mentioned this before on the show. You know, that hooked me from the first 5 minutes and carried me all the way through. But other than that,
that's a great show.
I watched Preacher and, you know, some of this, some more Way Out stuff, but no, the long running stuff, I'm not really into all of that. I'd rather just watch a movie, because it's like, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I could commit to that. Who's that? Is that you?
That's me. I'm so sorry.
Oh, but seriously, tell them to go away.
You're right.
God's sake, how unprofessional. I'm so sorry, Jim. So sorry. You know, you cannot get the staff. You cannot.
It's my daughter. She won't stop, and I'm trying to hush her up. But okay, I'll know better. Oops.
Yeah, go away, child. I gave birth to you.
That should
be enough. It should be enough.
Yeah. I just thought, you know, you have to tell your daughter to go to her room now.
She doesn't live with me. She's grown.
Yeah, she's like 28.
That's irrelevant. That doesn't matter. You're still her mother.
Yeah, go to your room, child.
You can ground her. Yeah, you are grounded. You are grounded. You're not going out for a week.
I'll
no allowance
that.
For a week. Yeah, try that. Well, the thing is, now I'm going to try to ground my eldest. I mean, my 15 now. And he just looks at you like, well, that means you're stuck with me for a week. So,
Yeah, you know, my son's
who's the loser now then?
Yeah, my son will be 14 on the 20th, and you know he doesn't do a whole lot. So ground him from what? You know, he really doesn't. You know, so I don't know what I would ground him from, which is kind of sad. But
we could just do the opposite, just make him do stuff, right? You know, as your punishment, you're going to go out. You're going to go out three nights this week. Yeah, you're going to go to the movies, you know, bowling, you're going to go out with your girlfriend. You're just going to go out and do stuff, yeah? Oh, Mom,
send
like
them a bill for all the money and effort you spent raising him.
Yeah.
I like that. I do.
You now have to pay this. I was going to let it go, but now you have to pay.
I'm going to have to. There was a song about that back in the 70s. I think it was called No Charge. Look it up. I can't remember who sang it now. Some country and western person. Huh. And that was pretty much the theme of the song, where the kid had done something. He brought his mum a bill he'd made for cutting the grass or something. And then she threw all this shit at him. Oh, well, I raised you for all these years, and I gave birth to you, and all the blood and sweat and tears. And I thought, you bitch. Seriously? Laying that on your kid because he wants, you know, a dollar for cutting the lawn. You miserable cow. Seriously.
Oh, my God.
You know, I mean, how mentally abusive as a mother to do that. You know, I'm not going to pay you. You've cut the grass, but you owe me because I gave birth to you. You know, I did all this and I brought you up and I fed you and clothed you. You just don't do that. That's horrible. I hate that song. Look it up.
Yeah.
It'll be on YouTube. Look it up. It's the most horrible, mentally abusive song out there, to be honest.
But look it up. Do you hear him? It's
but
awful.
Look it up and give it a listen. And maybe we'll play it next week on the show.
Oh, gosh. Thanks.
There you go.
So, anywho, I'm afraid we've run out of time.
I know. I was just going to say this.
I'm not sure
and
how.
I thank you so much, Jim, for coming on the show. And normally I ask everybody where we can find you online, but all your stock links are put up on our Facebook page. So if anybody wants to stock James A. Moore, they can go to our Facebook page and find all the links there to stalk him. And it's really fun to stalk him. I do this. I found a really cool picture of him on Goodreads today and developed an impression.
Uh-oh.
So.
Scary.
It was truly a pleasure being on.
Afraid. It was an absolute pleasure meeting you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Hopefully we'll
Thank
talk
you.
Soon.
Yeah, we'll have you back on before, well, when your next book comes out. Oh,
definitely.
It's time
that
for
sounds
it's that
like
time
a deal.
Where we have to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, guys.
Back off heaven it is. 1 minute off your sweet kiss. Then my heart was all amiss. It's love, baby, it's love. 60 minutes of you in my arms. 1 hour to learn off all your charms. Then my heart's like a fire alarm. It's love, baby, it's love. 12 hours of you to tantalize. One day for me to realize. My heart flutters like butterflies. It's love, baby, it's love. 7 days of wedding to plan. 1 week and then out again. The life of a happy marriage man. It's love, baby, it's love, heaven is bliss. 1 minute of your sweet kiss. Then my heart was all amiss. It's love, baby, it's love. 60 minutes of you in my arms. 1 hour to learn off all your charms. Then my heart's like a fire alarm. It's love, baby, it's love. 12 hours of you to tantalize. One day for me to realize. My heart flutters like butterflies. It's love, baby, it's love. 4 weeks of walking kisses. 1 month of fighting misses. I'm wondering now what the heck this is. If it's love, baby, what's love?